Well, man, we could have just dismissed you now and it would feel like a good Sunday, wouldn't it? Just to know that God is doing such incredible things through CR and other things that you'll hear about today. I'm glad to be back up here with you. I don't know if any of you even noticed that I have been gone. If you haven't, that's okay. It means we're in good shape. I was looking back at the calendar. Last time that I was up here and spoke was a month ago. I don't know that I've ever had a month off in my 23 years of being a pastor. So if this isn't the best version of me, then I give up. Because I should be good and rested. But what a blessing it's been. I think you would say to have Preston and Joe up here the last number of weeks, what a great, tremendous gift, as well as Baptism Sunday that was in there a few weeks back. It's just been a really good summer, really good summer. And summer, speaking of which, goes by really fast for us. How many Vail parents in the room? You're like, hallelujah, school is back. Anybody? All right. Yeah, in Vail it goes fast, right? Before you know it, vacation is everyone's back and we're back in school. And over the 5 years or so of our church's short existence, the acronym LBC has carried sort of a dual meaning for us. The obvious meaning, of course, is Living Branch Church, LBC, which is the name of our church, coming out of John 15, chapter 5, Chapter 15, verse 5, I should say. But a secondary meaning, which we kind of adopted along the way, which has become kind of a central part of our culture and DNA here at LBC, is the phrase, life's better connected, also LBC. And we really kind of stumbled into that accidentally. We didn't pick LBC initially because it worked in that capacity, but it's very quickly, early on in our existence, kind of become a part of our DNA here at LBC. You've seen it all over the place. You're seeing it now on my shirt, other shirts around. Like, it's something we print on shirts. We tag it on our social media over and over and over again. We've come back over these 4 or 5 years that we've been a church to this statement, to this belief that life is better connected, but not just so that we would have fun shirts to print and hand out once a year, but rather because we wholeheartedly believe that it actually aligns with the story and the design of God. I'm going to show you what I mean. This is Genesis chapter 2, right from the beginning. Then the Lord said, "It is not good for the man to be alone. I will make a helper corresponding to him." Now, of course, this is in the context of a partner, in the case of Eve, for Adam, right? Picture of marriage, however you want to think of that. But the point to see here, if you zoom out from the specifics of the relationship of Adam and Eve, the point to see here is that right from the opening pages of history, this is where the history of humanity first started, Adam and Eve, Genesis chapter 2, right from the opening pages of history. As an initial part of God's perfect plan of creation, God has been intentional about creating us to be in relationship with one another, in relationship with one another. As families, as friends, as neighbors, as colleagues, the story of the Bible and the story of human history, if you will, is first our relationship with our Creator, and then secondarily, our relationships with others, with other people, with mankind, whatever the context of that relationship may be. And what's so striking to me about God's declaration to Adam in Genesis chapter 2, that it was not good for him to be alone, is that it came after God had created all these other incredible parts of creation, which were what? They were good, right? If you read the account of creation, it says, if you can read it, on day one, God created this. On day two, God created this. On day three. And at the end of each of those days, the story of the Bible reads, God saw all that he had created and it was very good. So it wasn't as though by the time you get to Genesis chapter 2 and God's looking at Adam like, man, the first 6 days have just been a colossal failure. Let's redeem it by creating Eve. It wasn't that way at all. Every single part of creation that God had spoken into existence at that point, he declared it to be very good. Mountains, waterfalls, oceans, animals, all of the most beautiful parts of creation that quite honestly are a whole lot simpler than humans. A waterfall doesn't keep you up at night. Your cat probably keeps you up at night. Your dog does not keep you up at night. The mountains that you wake up to here in Tucson do not keep you up at night. Like, they're just beautiful and simple parts of God's good creation. Humans, not so simple. And yet, God's declaration, it's not good for man to be alone, comes after, on the back end of all this incredible work that he had done. I find it so striking. Adam could have been fine. Like, dude, just enjoy this perfection that God has placed you in. And God said, no. There's something more here. God declared it's not good for man. Man is, it's another way to think of it is, man is not whole yet until he's in relationship with others. Life's better connected. Why? So that we have a nice acronym for a church in Vail, Arizona. No. But because God designed it that way. Life is better connected to one another. And so each year about this time, if you've been with us, you recognize this. We pause and we do either a short series around this theme, because I'm becoming just more and more convinced each year that these Babylonian devices, as Joe so appropriately named them, it's a cell phone if you weren't here, specifically a smartphone. I was with my mom this week. She has a flip phone, and I'm like, what is this thing? Anyhow, joke's lost on you. But I am becoming more and more convinced each year that as these cell phones continue their invasive reach into our lives, we need this truth pressed into our souls at least yearly, if not more often. If not more often. And last year, we did this over the course of 3 weeks. Today, we're going to do this over the course of the next 20 to 25 minutes. So here we go. You've heard me mention, it's been a while since I've talked about it, but I read a book, I don't know, year and a half ago, called The Anxious Generation. It's a book by a guy named Jonathan Haidt. And the premise of this book is how smartphones are rewiring adolescents and changing just the landscape of how kids grow up today, and thereby leading to a mental health crisis amongst young people. That's the Cliff Notes version of the book. It's very interesting. It's very sobering, and I highly recommend it, especially if you are a parent of a child or teen in the phone age era of life or trending that direction, which is probably a lot of you. Anyhow, in the book, Haidt writes this: synchronous face-to-face physical interactions and rituals are a deep, ancient, and underappreciated part of human maturity. In other words, the way that you mature, as God has so designed you, is through eyes up, looking into the eyes of other people, experiencing true relationships with other people. That is how you mature. That is the rituals are deep, ancient, and underappreciated part of human maturity. And what the author of this book, Haidt, is echoing the very theme of the Bible, in my opinion. It's not a Christian book, per se. But it is an echo, I think, of a lot of what the biblical narrative is about, that God has designed us to be, designed us so that relationships are the basis of how we mature and grow and experience life together on the planet. That's the premise of the book. And I'm not going to say a whole lot more about smartphones, because I thought Joe just did such a brilliant job last week of kind of painting that picture for us. But just by curiosity, it's no shame. I got obviously mine right here. Hands up if you have a smartphone on you right now. Okay. There's a lot of money being made off of us, by the way, in the room. They are incredible tools. They are incredible tools. Don't get me wrong. That also allow us to be everywhere except for right where we are. God has hardwired us to be in relationships with one another and with him. And when we are isolated and when we are detached from meaningful relationships, we are in essence swimming upstream against the relational current that he originally, when he said it was good, designed for us. And I live in the same world that you do. I am enslaved to this device probably more than you are. So this isn't like a attempt to shame you for your screen time or anything of the sort. It's just to awaken our hearts to the reality of, like, the very tools that make life go for us are pushing against the relational current that God has originally designed for us, that we would be eyes up, face to face with one another. God has designed us for a relationship. There's no getting around that truth. And something interesting that has sort of unfolded over the last 10 to 15 years, maybe more recent than that, is that isolation and independence have kind of become this celebrated thing in our culture, if you think about it. So what I mean to say is that this like lone ranger mentality, if you will, is often celebrated as a sign of toughness and strength. Like, I don't need anyone. I don't need anything. I can do this myself. I'm tough. I'm independent. Sit back and kind of watch me soar, if you will. And it's become a lot more celebrated than it used to be. And that's a new way of thinking and living that unintentionally, I believe, has devalued the roles of community and relationships in our lives. Unintentionally, but it has happened. But I think we see it in the Bible, that life is better connected to one another. What's the value of being connected to one another? I mean, after all, this device in our pocket is highly addictive. And it does an exceptional job of isolating us from others. So my job, the next, I guess I said 20 minutes ago, so I need to say 18 minutes now. it's not going to happen. My job is to make a persuasive argument to you, using the Bible, that life is better connected with our eyes up, so to speak, connected to one another in meaningful relationships. We just traveled home, I don't know, a week or so ago. We're on the road a lot, and anywhere you go, and I was, of course, thinking about this moment today, and you just go in airports or restaurants or on the plane or wherever you're at, and just look at clusters of people, and nobody is talking to one another. We are sitting in circles doing this. And certainly I'm guilty of that at times, but I just think that unintentionally there is an assault on the biblical design of being personally connected to one another that is so invasive in our lives and culture today that we cannot even recognize it. And so I'm going to give you, I think, three reasons why I think life's better connected. The first one, admittedly, I pulled from a previous message, dusted it off, made it sound a little better. Because I think this is the foundation that the whole thing rests on, and that's this: being connected to one another affords us opportunities to practice the one another's. It affords us opportunities to practice the one another's. Now, if you're unfamiliar with what I mean by that, in the Bible, specifically in the New Testament, you will find over 100 phrases, statements, however you want to think of it, of the term one another. And about 60 of those are specific commands, if you will, about how we are to treat one another. But then as you start to look at those one another statements, you'll see that they'll start to see some themes, I think, that kind of group together and begin to emerge out of those. So if you take all 100, more specifically those 60, and you just say, all right, what are some of the common themes? You begin to start to identify those. And I'll show you a couple of them. First, the one another's call us to unity. So there's a number of them that drive us towards unity. And within these themes, there's numerous Bible verses. I'm going to share some with you, and then I'm just going to read you the rest. Romans 15:7. I think maybe I got the translation wrong on this. Here it is. Accept one another then, just as Christ accepted you, in order to bring praise to God. Colossians 3:13. Bearing with one another and forgiving one another. If anyone has a grievance against one another, just as the Lord has forgiven you, so you also are to forgive. The modern solution to that is, I just cut you out of my life. It's easy. I can just cut you out of my life. I don't have to bear with you. I don't have to forgive you. If I have a grievance against you, I just defriend you on Facebook. And think of the craziness of that. There's others. Just listen. You won't see these. These are all around the theme of unity. Be at peace with one another. Mark 9:50. Don't grumble against one another. John 6:43, be of the same mind with one another. Romans 12:6, don't bite and devour one another. I love that verse. It was like they knew 2025 would come at some point. Galatians 5:15, don't challenge or envy one another. Galatians 5:26, gently, patiently tolerate with one another. Ephesians 4:2, be kind and tenderhearted. forgiving one another, Ephesians 4:32. These are all around the theme of unity, if you lost me. Seek good for one another and don't repay evil for evil, 1 Thessalonians 5:15. Don't complain against one another, James 4:11. Confess your sins to one another, James 5:16. All of these call us to unity. There's a second theme found in the one another's, and the one another's call us to love. So similar to the theme of unity, the theme of love is well supported throughout the Bible. I'll show you a couple of these. John 13:34, I give you a new command, love one another. Just as I have loved you, you are also to love one another. This one, by the way, from what I can tell, as you flip through the scriptures, you'll find that at least 10 other times in the Bible in some form or fashion. Love one another. Romans 12:10, love one another deeply as brothers and sisters. Take the lead in honoring one another. Others that I'll just kind of throw out to you, Galatians 5:13, through love, serve one another. Ephesians 4:2, be completely humble and gentle, be patient, bearing with one another in love. 1 Peter 5:14, greet one another with a kiss of love. The one another's call us to love over and over and over again. They call us to unity, they call us to love. There's a third theme found in it, and this is a difficult one. The one another's call us to humility. Let me share a couple of these scriptures. Philippians chapter 2, verse 3. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility, consider others as more important than yourselves. 1 Peter 5:5, in the same way, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. All of you, clothe yourselves with humility towards one another because God resists the proud but gives grace to the humble. When you're in relationship with other people, it requires these things of you. In isolation, not so much. But in relationship, being connected to one another, I'm asked to be humble. I'm asked to practice unity and to extend love. And all of the other themes that I haven't even mentioned, there's a few other passages that support this theme of humility. John 13:14, wash one another's feet. In other words, figure out the way to serve one another in a way that you would just be like, no way, not in a million years. Give preference to one another in honor. That's Romans chapter 12, verse 10. Don't be haughty towards one another. Be of the same mind. Romans 12, 16. Be subject to one another. Ephesians 5, 21. The point is, the one another's call us to unity. They call us to love and they call us to humility. And of all those things make us more like Jesus, we reflect the heart of Jesus. But guess what they require? Another person. Another person. They aren't practiced, they aren't lived out in isolation. That's why being connected to one another affords us opportunities to practice these things. And I would say it's also the reason we avoid being connected to other people, because it asks us to practice these things. And it helps us to mature in our relationship with Jesus. Let's be honest, life is easier in isolation to some extent. But it is not better, because it is inconsistent with the design of God. The things that God declared good are good because he designed them good. And he didn't design man in isolation and then declare it was good. In fact, much to the opposite, he said, it is not good that man is alone. I will create for him a helper suitable for him. And from that, Adam and Eve populated the earth. And ever since then, we've had this thing, these things called humans that are incredibly complex, incredibly complex. Niagara Falls just does its thing every single day. Humans, you're like, which version of Rob am I going to get today? Life is easier in isolation, but it is not better. To some degree, we could argue that life is easier disconnected, because being in relationships with others is messy, it's difficult, and it stretches us to grow, no matter the context of the relationship. But stepping into unity, stepping into love, stepping into humility is consistent with the plan of God as we extend that to one another. So that's the first reason that life's better connected to one another. It affords us opportunities to practice one another's. Secondly, it's a clear picture of the love and grace of the Father. One of the clearest pieces of evidence of the love and grace of the Father towards us is his gift of people and community to us. Some of you are like, you don't know my people. Doesn't matter. It is such a clear piece of evidence of the love and grace of the Father extended to us. I think, at least I do for sure, I take it for granted at times. I just take it for granted. Jesus' promise to us, one of his promises to us was that in this life you have tribulation, hardship, John 16, but that our hope is in the truth that he has already overcome the world. And yet the reality of life is that when we are getting squeezed by the various circumstances, when those tribulations come, like for sure Jesus got that part of it right. Like in this world you will have tribulation. And you're like, no truer thing has been spoken, Jesus. You nailed that one. You nailed that one. And so when those tribulations come and when we're getting squeezed by those circumstances, as Jesus promised that we would, we need others around us to hold up our weary arms and to speak life into us and to tell us that we're with you. That's why in the service, the way I do every single Sunday, like we are with you, we are for you. Like you have to fight back the lies and the strongholds of Satan to know that there are people in your corner. And there are people who are cheering for you and people walking with you and praying with you and holding up your weary arms. And I've said this before, what I'm going to share with you now. One of the passages in the Bible that my wife Kendra, I think, kind of first identified when we started this road of disability is in the book of Exodus. It's a scene you've heard, if you've been with us, I think I even shared this last year. It's a scene where the Israelites find themselves in battle against the Amalekites. Let me show you this passage, Exodus 17. At Rephidim, Amalek came and fought against Israel. Moses said to Joshua, so they're going into battle, select some men from us and go fight against Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the hilltop and God's staff in my hand. Joshua did as Moses had told him and fought against Amalek while Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. While Moses held up his hand, Israel prevailed. But whenever he put it down, Amalek prevailed. When Moses' hand grew weary, this is a problem, they took a stone and put it under him and he sat down on it. I mean, if the hands are down, you're going to lose, Moses. You got to keep those hands up. Got to keep those arms up. Be strong. Then Aaron and Hur supported his hands. That's a good solution. One on one side and one on the other so that his hands remained steady until the sun went down. So Joshua defeated Amalek and his army with the sword. What does community look like? It looks like having an Aaron and a Hur to hold up your hands and your arms when you're tired. And I would honestly tell you, as I've told you before, but I don't know another story to like tell you other than my own story and my own experience. I would tell you that before Hadley was born, she just turned 10 in May. We're younger than we look, don't worry. Before Hadley was born, before we found ourselves on this very unique, very difficult road of disability, many of our friendships were just very superficial. Like, I suppose there's a phase of life that everybody goes through where you're like, hey, do you want to, you know, go to IHOP at 1 a.m? Sure. But by and large, our friendships were just kind of surface level. There was just not a lot of depth to them. Because we didn't really need there to be depth to those relationships. Life was right in front of us. It was just go get it. Finish college, get good jobs, make money, buy a house. Like it's just there. Just go get it. And then Hadley was born and stumbled into unexpected road of disability. And now we find ourselves in friendships and community that just have an unimaginable depth to them. And if I'm honest with you, which I try to be when I'm up here preaching, I would admit that we had no idea how much we needed those before the battle came and our arms started to feel droopy. And now I can clearly look back and I can look around us and see such clear evidence of the love and the grace of the Father towards us, giving us something that we did not really know we would even need and quite honestly took for granted. And now I cannot imagine our lives without it, without it. So community and being connected to one another is a clear picture of the love and the grace of the Father towards us. What a gift it is that God would send us people to say, we got you. We'll hold up your weary arms when they're tired so that you might prevail. You might continue to win the battle. What a gift it is. And so the Lone Ranger isolationist mindset that is really taking this good gift that I think God has first given to us, pushing it back to God and saying, no thanks, I'm good. I just want to be left alone. There will come a point in your life, if it hasn't come yet, when you need someone to hold up your arms, metaphorically speaking. Are you connected with others in such a way today, friends, that you can readily, without any thought, call to mind who are those people that are going to come hold up my arms when they're weary? And vice versa, who are you for that person? That your name would just roll off their tongue and say, who are your people? Who is your community when life squeezes you and presses you? Who are the people that are going to just be there to hold up your arms when you're weary so that you might prevail? If you can't identify those people and others can't identify you as that person, I would suggest you've isolated yourself in a way that is not consistent with how God has designed us to be connected to one another. And the story of that, the story that I just read in Exodus 17, like you have Moses, you have Joshua, like these are competent leaders. These are tough dudes. Like it's not a matter of your capacity, like whether you're competent or incompetent or a leader or not a leader. It's just a matter of like circumstances. Like at some point the battle is going to come to your doorstep. And you got to fight it, whether you're a Joshua or whether you're not. You got to have those people that will hold up your weary arms when you're there. One final reason life is better connected is that it's the dress rehearsal for heaven. It's the dress rehearsal for heaven. I'm about to get on my soapbox, but I haven't been up here in a month, so I'm allowed to do that. This notion of I'm good with God and I'm good with following Jesus, just don't bother me with his people, is totally heretical. It is totally heretical. That's why live stream, I just want to say a lot about live stream, but I only say this. It serves its purpose. You're laid up from surgery, you're homebound due to an illness, you're sick, you're traveling. That's the only purpose it serves, because it's still, to some degree, it's fostering this isolationist mentality. And too many people have said, I live stream, not because I'm homebound, not because I had surgery, not because I'm traveling, but I just don't like the people that go to churches. And I'm just telling you, and it doesn't have to bother you, although I hope it will, that is totally heretical to say that. The notion that you can follow Jesus and care about the things that Jesus care about, and yet one of those things not be people, you aren't following Jesus then. Because Jesus cared for nothing if he didn't care for people. That was his whole life, was people. And so this notion that you can follow Jesus and yet want nothing of the local church is to ignore a very large percentage of the New Testament. If you love the Old Testament, I suppose you got your new Bible, but you should rip out most of the New Testament if you don't like the local church. And this has nothing to do with LBC. Like, you're here today, maybe after this you'll never come back. I don't know. It's not about our church. I'm not saying like LBC. I'm just saying like the local church. Heaven will be populated just like the local church is populated with what? Say it. People. People who trusted their lives to Christ. And so this isolationist mentality, goodness, heaven will be a shock to the system. It will be a shock to the system. I think one of the best things that the experience of world missions gives you, if you have a chance to do it, you ought to do it, is a preview of the diversity of heaven. When I was in India and worshiped with fellow Christians in India, oh my goodness, it looked nothing like this. In Costa Rica, the Dominican Republic, all places we've had a chance to go, it was just so rich, and yet it looked nothing of what you're experiencing today. And it's a preview of heaven. It's a preview of the diversity of heaven. John had a preview. The Apostle John had a preview of heaven. He wrote about it in the book of Revelation. This is what he says. After this, I looked. This preview of heaven. There was a vast multitude of every nation, tribe, people, and language, which no one could number, standing before the throne, before the Lamb. They were clothed in white robes with palm branches in their hands. Catch the language there. Every tribe, people, language, it's going to be wildly diverse. As a white male American, I will be a minority in heaven. No questions asked. Every tribe, people, language is wildly diverse. One of the reasons I believe our phones have so much power to isolate us is because the algorithms are reinforcing all the things which I am most comfortable with. Right? So why risk going out there and having to rub shoulders and engage with others that aren't just like me? This is much safer because it's smart enough that if I like this thing that's funny, it's going to feed me the next one that's really similar. And whatever my political opinion is, it's going to feed me more of that, usually by shaming or demeaning the quote-unquote other side. The style of clothing and home decor that I like, it's going to give me more options to choose from. It's isolating me by reinforcing my personal biases, which make me really comfortable. And quite honestly, disinterested in doing the hard work of living life with people who are unlike me. Does that equate in your mind? I just felt like it was a light bulb moment for me as I was putting this together today. I was like, you know, what is it about my phone? It's so comfortable for me. And it's like, oh, I know what it is. It's just reinforcing everything that I want my world to be. And the people that I don't want to interact with, my phone doesn't make me interact with them. And the people that think differently than me, I can scroll on by. Like it's doing a phenomenal job of reinforcing my personal biases. It is far easier, and dare I say, it is far less risky. It's far less risky. One of the things about Alpha that I love so much is I just don't know who's going to be in the room, and it terrifies me. Because I'm like, chances are there's going to be some people that show up to Alpha that think very differently than me and have different interpretations of this or that and the other thing. And yet it is so rich. And somehow we get through 12 weeks and we don't bite each other's heads off. And we actually see people come to faith and God do transformative work in the hearts of people that came in maybe certain of this and then see the hope and the truth of the gospel. And when you come through the gospel accounts of Jesus' life, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you'll quickly identify a pattern. Some of the most significant moments of Jesus' life was when he was in physical proximity to people who were very unlike him. The adulterous woman, the tax collector, Pharisees, the blind man. I mean, you can go down a list, a long, long list of people. Some of the most profound moments of Jesus' life was when he was in physical proximity to those who were very different than him. I shared last week that our family had the privilege of being at camp the week before in Alabama. There was a gentleman there that was leading us that by the name of Dr. Kurt Thompson. If you don't know who he is or if you're unfamiliar with him, he's a psychologist. He's a brilliant man, very brilliant man, but he also deeply loves Jesus. So it's a great combo. And he was talking about this very notion of relationships and diversity and referencing the account of Adam and Eve that we've already looked at this morning. And he said, differentiation, so the man and his wife. And then he goes on to say, we need to be in the room with others different than us in order to know fully who God has designed us to be. How do you know you're different than someone? You be around someone who's different than you. You be around someone who's different than you. Life's better connected because in relationships with one another, we are experiencing the dress rehearsal of heaven. To have this notion that we love God and we long for heaven, but we want nothing of God's people, like, I don't know how to begin to describe what your eternal experience will be like. Other than that, God will just transform that calloused part of your soul. Say, like, oh, turns out it's about God's good people. I said at the beginning, we believe so strongly in this that we set aside a Sunday or two or however many we do each year to just hopefully saturate our souls with this. It's not rocket science. Like, life's better connected is a pretty straightforward statement, but to just really press it into our souls And today we're doing something, I think that, I mean, we've sort of done it in part before, but when you leave service today, in addition to the food and the free ice cream and the t-shirts that you'll get to enjoy, in addition to all of that, you're going to find tables that look very similar to this out there, and they're going to have a sign on it. And you can go to that next slide. I think maybe it lists out what you're going to find out there. Yes, thank you. So you'll find our various leaders of all of these things that you see there on the screen. So if the order is the same as what's here on my iPad, LBC Kids, so Tammy and her team will be there. LBC Students, that's Joe and his team for our middle and high school students. LBC Ladies, that's Laura and Kayla, will be there to help connect you ladies. LBC Men, that's Carl, different Carl than what was up here, but Carl. And then Celebrate Recovery, I mentioned that earlier, that will be other Carl. Alpha, I'm going to try and make my way to the Alpha table. If you're unfamiliar with Alpha, that is just a 12-week program where you can come with your questions, doubts. If you think the Bible is just a giant fairy tale, whatever it is, whatever your history is, your background, Alpha is for you. That's going to kick off in September. Cart Crew, that's our ice cream cart. We go all over the community. This past Friday, we were just right here at Cienega serving 600 students on their way to the bus to celebrate their 25th anniversary as a school. So if you're interested in that, there's a little incentive to this. This is, number one, it's great for a family. If you have kiddos and looking for a way to connect, that's a great way to do it. So when you go to the ice cream cart, Paul and Jean will be there. Not only will they give you free ice cream, but if you're interested in being a part of that, they'll take your information. They'll give you a Cart Crew shirt that is sweet. And you only get those if you serve on the Cart Crew. Anyhow, that's plug there. LBC Buddies and our support squad. So that's our ministry to those that are impacted by disability. That's Michelle Wood and others that will be there to support her. And then Life Groups. Preston will be there to help connect you. But here's what I'll say as we wrap up. Each of these ministry tables will have someone there to give you additional information about how you can connect. But these ministries are a means to an end. The end being that you find meaningful connection with others. I mean, there's far too much chaos on the schedule and far too many resources for this just to be something to just put on your calendar. There are means to an end, and that end is that you would find meaningful connection with others, whether that's through a group that you're participating in, whether that's through handing out free ice cream in our community, like you would be in proximity to one another. Life in community, because life is better connected. And so some of you are going to be inclined to just grab some nachos. That's what the snack is. I just gave it away. It's fine. Darn it. Had one job. Keep it a mystery. Some of you are leaving now. So you're going to be inclined to grab some sort of mysterious snack and a free t-shirt and split for the car. And here's the deal. Our sheriffs are not going to tackle you, although if they did, that would be fun. But just from my heart, I would just encourage you not to do that. Just stop at a table and have a conversation with somebody. Be careful of believing your own lie that because you show up here regularly on Sundays, you're connected. Because I know some people that is true for that are in very deep, dark places. And you would have no idea because they sit in one of these seats every single week. Be careful of believing the lie that you tell yourself that because you show up here regularly on Sundays, you are connected to other people. Do the hard work of making yourself available to be the friend that someone else is looking for. I mentioned when Carl was up here a few moments ago that later this afternoon I'm doing a memorial for a gentleman who just 2 years older or 3 years older than me, very unexpectedly went to heaven. And when his mom called me last week to tell me of his passing, she made sort of a just passing comment that landed heavy on my heart. She said, when he ended up in the hospital, I couldn't believe how many friends showed up, friends that I didn't even know he had. Now, you hear that as like, oh, he had big community. That's not what she meant. What she meant by that statement was that he lived most of his life in isolation, and she wasn't even aware that these friends because they never came around him. Until the call came, hey, you ought to come see your friend if you ever want to see him again. That's what she meant by that comment. It was like, I didn't even know that he had these people because they never showed up in his life. But then when the 911 call went out to say, hey, it's now or never, they came flocking in. And I just think the Bible calls us to something more, something here and now as we pursue relationships with one another, practice the one another's, experiencing firsthand the love and the grace of Jesus through the gift of community and participating in the dress rehearsal of heaven. This is what it is. It's a dress rehearsal of heaven. Heaven will be two things. It will be the absolute overwhelming presence of Jesus, and it will be populated by people from all over the globe who've trusted in Christ for salvation. This is the dress rehearsal for that, imperfect though it is. Amen? May it be so for us at LBC that life is better connected. Let's pray together. Father, thank you so much for the gift of this community. I know on days where I'm just struggling, one of the best cures for my soul is to just picture the faces and to remember the names of so many of the people that are sitting here today that I just know are with me and they're for me. And that's to say nothing of the absolute gift of your presence with us. And so where human relationships may fail us, you never fail us. And maybe it's been a human relationship in the past that's made us withdraw and to say, no, life is easier, just me, myself, and I. And it is easier, but it's not better. It's not better. What's better is living in the good design that you first breathe into motion to say, it is not good for man to be alone. And from that very moment, the world has been just littered with people. Imperfect people, hurting one another, disappointing one another, abandoning one another, frustrating one another. But the other side of that coin is the gift of people, supporting one another, walking beside one another, encouraging one another, praying for one another, lifting one another up. And so I just thank you for this gift of this community that we call LBC. What a rich gift it is to me. And my prayer is that it would be for many here today, that they would just find true community, real relationships. And these various ways that people can connect, God, we ask that you would just give them a vulnerability today to say, even though I'm introverted, even though I've been hurt, even though I'm inclined to just kind of do my own thing, I believe that life's better connected to other people. And so would you make this fruitful, that people would feel connected and cared for and seen. We all want to be seen. We all want to be seen. May nobody make it to their car today without a certainty that they are seen and they are loved. First by you, secondly by many who call this church home. Thank you. Thank you for the gift of community. Thank you that you've given us relationships with one another. May we do our part today to practice the one another's, to just continue to enrich this community, and that people would experience the love and the hope of Christ because of that. We love you, we trust you, and we thank you in Jesus' name.